Good evening. Welcome to the Soleri Report. Today is October 8th, 2015. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm speaking to you from Amsterdam. I'll be here till the 23rd, and we're having lunch with Catherine next week, October 17th. I encourage you to forward it to family and friends if you have them in Amsterdam. It's open to the public. You can find the link under events or on the homepage at the website. And then October 31st and November 1st, I'll be at the Secret Space Program Conference in Austin, Texas. You can both get tickets live with the Soleri discount. Again, go to the website, or also you can stream if you don't want to attend in person. Our theme tonight is the establishment always wins, but sometimes they change their minds. The line, "the establishment always wins," is a great line from the Warwicker trilogy, where the Tony Blair character says to Johnny Warwicker, you know, "the establishment always wins." But the reality is they do change their mind. And we are definitely seeing that happen this fall. I said that this fall would be a major turning point, and again, that is the case. And I published a commentary, a story from The Economist. It's up on the homepage, called "Dominant and Dangerous," and it's a big, it has a big picture of the dollar. There's a special report, and it's worth looking at that Economist. But let me read you the subtitle: "As America's economic supremacy fades, the primacy of the dollar looks unsustainable." And this is basically the, you know, The Economist, which I consider the official mouthpiece, the public mouthpiece for the City of London, saying that this is, you know, we are beginning to see the beginning of the end for the supremacy of the dollar. In fact, they, at one point in the special report, they even suggest that the governance of the dollar could move out of U.S. hands. It's clearly the beginning of a clear move to a multipolar world, as we talked about in the annual wrap-up in January. It's part of what I call the great unraveling of the Bretton Woods system. But we see the limits of America power every day in the news. If you go to Top Picks, I don't think I've ever had more stories under geopolitics than we do this week. Iran announced no more talks with America. They've done their deal, and from now on, no more talking with America. Russia's intervention in Syria is clearly quite a message. And the Russians sending missiles from the Caspian Sea now over to Syria and bombing ISIS, and really putting the CIA in a very difficult position of admitting that they're financing rebels in Syria. The Economist points out that the dollar can't stay the reserve currency if it's simply a stalking horse for U.S. financial sanctions. And that's always been the slippery slope with financial sanctions. You can't be the global leader and a global currency if you're simply a tool of parochial economic interests. And the reality is the U.S. has not played global leader as much as they've played U.S. parochial interests. We've had several years of high dollar and high S&P, something that many of us didn't feel could happen coming out of the bailouts, and yet it has. And I must say the U.S. has done a remarkable job of maintaining that power despite the blowing more than a small fortune on the Middle East wars and blowing its brand with the financial bailouts. It's really astonishing. If you look at some of the numbers in the special report in The Economist, the U.S. has held on to, are you ready for this, 60% of global venture capital market share, 50% of money management, that's astonishing, 40% of investment banking revenues. And it's taken a lot of financial sanctions, a lot of force and violence to do that. The U.S. is going to continue to enjoy significant power domestically and globally, so this is going to be a very slow process. I don't expect anything fast, but the reality is we are watching the real limits of power, and it's becoming more and more obvious. One of the challenges is that when you've been bullying people for 70 years and you've had this incredible subsidy coming and you lose it, the worm can really turn. For most of us who live in North America, it means imports are going to be more expensive. There's going to be more pressure to export oil, food, and other goods that have been consumed domestically. The U.S. dollar is going to continue to lose buying power. But as the limits of the power become more obvious, the lies stop working. And I think part of what you're seeing from around the world is as the world gets less afraid and less afraid, there's more transparency, more leaking of the truth that's coming out. We're certainly seeing that in and around the Middle East. Anyway, as you know, one of my favorite expressions is, if we can face it, God can fix it. We have a lot to face. The Americans have a lot to face, and it looks like there's going to be more than a little opportunity. If you have a chance to read that special report in The Economist, I strongly recommend it. I put the summary article up on the commentary. Most of the special report is subscriber only, so you'll need to go down to the newsstand and buy a copy of The Economist. Money and markets. We've seen a strong rise in the first week of the fourth quarter. The third quarter was quite a correction. I did the equity overview tonight, so I would encourage you to listen to that. And what I described is the extent of the correction during the third quarter. But we've popped up quite a bit. The S&P's now down 3% for the year. At the end of September, it was down 6%, so it's come halfway. Gold now down 3.5%, and looks like gold has come halfway. Silver has come up quite a lot, so it was stronger for the year. Oil now down 28%. That's a strong up from where it was in September. The DAX, the German DAX, now up a little bit more than 1.5%. Again, that's strong week. China now down 7%. They cut their down. They were down about 15% as of the end of the third quarter. The developed world now almost flat. They're down 0.64% for the year. And then emerging markets now down 9.82%. They've cut their, not quite half, but they've cut it almost in half. And the long treasury now down 2% for the year. The aggregate bond still flat for the year. And commodities, the commodity index now down 13%. U.S. dollar now up 5.47%. That's off a little bit from the end of the quarter. The U.S. dollar index now trading at 95.58. This is the Wednesday close I'm working from. I want to talk about a couple of big things tonight. Just sort of take a look at the big picture and make sure you have some perspective on these things, because they've been in the news a lot and they're going to be in the news a lot more. First thing I want to talk about is what I call the woman thing. We've seen quite an effort by the American leadership to promote the idea of women. And I keep wondering what the angle is on this. And I posted recently a new study from the McKinsey Global Institute talking about the importance of what women playing a more active role in the labor markets could do for the global economy. They estimated it could add as much as $28 trillion to global annual GDP. The idea is if all the women go into the workplace and work in the more formal economy, that they're going to add $28 trillion. Now, they're going to add $28 trillion to the formal economy if they stop doing the work they're doing in the informal economy. Who knows what that could do? It's not necessarily good, but my guess is McKinsey thinks it's going to be good for corporations. But now we had a very interesting story this week from Business Insider, and it really, I think, gives important insight to what this whole women's thing has been for the last 2 years. Let me read it to you. China has long been an investor's dream, a reliable economic juggernaut that made a 10% annual growth rate look easy. But now the Middle Kingdom is sputtering and investors are looking for the next big source of growth. U.S. Trust Joseph Quinlan advances an unexpected idea: women. He characterizes women as the most underutilized and underleveraged resource in the world. He writes, wealthier and healthier influencers and creators, women now represent one of the most powerful economic cohorts, not only in the United States, but also the world. Thanks to rising educational levels, greater labor force participation rates, and rising incomes, the global purchasing power of women has never been greater. He continued, around the world, more girls are in school, more women are working, the policies are being put in place to treat women more equitably. Right now, only about 50% of women participate in the formal economy, which Quinlan notes is a colossal waste of talent and a huge forfeiture of demand spending. U.S. Trust estimates that global female income topped $15 trillion in 2014. That's 40% larger than China's economy and larger than every economy except that of the U.S. OECD estimates suggest that closing the gender gap in OECD nations will add 12% to the gross domestic product. Meanwhile, closing the gender gap in Japan would add about 20% to GDP in 15 years, and just narrowing it by 50% would add another 11% to GDP, according to OECD estimates. That potentially would be a remarkable boost to growth for a nation literally and figuratively dying for a shot in the arm. But the female economy's boom is not inevitable. There are some nations where women are still forbidden to work, drive cars, own property, and sometimes even leave their homes. From a strictly economic point of view, this ends up being a disadvantage to individual women, to the larger economy as a whole. A World Bank report cited by Quinlan found that out of the 173 economies examined in the report, women experience gender-based job restrictions in 100 of them. Anyway, here's the bottom line. Now with smartphone one-on-one marketing, you don't need to market to Asia or to Europe or to the Middle East or Africa, although obviously regional marketing matters. But now you can market one by one. It's a whole new way of going about communication and control. The latest statistics on digital commerce, let me give you an example. Digital commerce is growing. U.S. digital commerce grew nearly 15% in 2015. Online sales are projected to grow from $263 billion in 2013 to $414 billion by 2018. And it's forecasted that mobile commerce will comprise 40% of all digital commerce transactions. Now, let's go back to the last presidential, or the last time we voted in a new president. When Obama was voted in, you could see there was tremendous concern about what the United States was up to in the Middle East, in Africa, as well as U.S. minority communities. And putting in an African-American president was very clever, because it meant we can continue to engage in very significant genocide in many communities in many countries globally, and put a very attractive face on it. Now, if you're looking to really outcompete China and maintain economic supremacy globally, doing the woman thing is a very clever thing. And particularly now that you can market one by one by the smartphone. So the interesting thing is, if you look at the last 70 years, certainly within the country domestically, the leadership has used sort of the woman thing very, very successfully to roll local control. It's consistently been used as a both minority rights and women rights has been used consistently to sort of roll the local players. And so now it's beginning to make more sense why there's so much push to have Hillary Clinton become president. If you look at Clinton's negatives, they're extremely high, and I would suspect they're just going to keep getting higher as she campaigns. So exactly how they're going to pull this off or jam this, it's not clear to me. But it's one of the reasons I think that they really have been pushing this this angle, because if you look at the size of the global market, to the extent you can brand yourself as the woman-friendly culture, it can do a great deal, particularly now as you're moving into the emerging and frontier markets, and people are becoming, or women are becoming, much more active in the labor force and in the economy. The other reality is, if the U.S. is about to lose its real global mantle as the global superpower, and if the dollar is going to lose supremacy, then a woman is a perfect face for that step down. So I've always said that if they jammed Clinton into the presidency, it was because they wanted to basically bring the U.S. down a step. off of the superpower mantle. So, again, it's going to be interesting to see how they jam this. But I think the reality is, in a world of one-on-one marketing, you can literally look at women globally as one market. The second thing, so that's the woman thing. I want to talk about the gun thing. We had another supposed mass shooting in Oregon, and I put up a link on the website to a website that collects all mass shootings. Does it count for by the year? Right now, according to the website, there are 294, but if you look at them, my guess is that what you and I would describe as a mass shooting is only probably about 100 of them. And I sat tonight with an ally called a great ally and said, okay, I want you to write down these numbers and not tell me, and then we'll compare. What out of that 100, how many of those shootings were covert operations or inspired by entrainment? So covert electronics. And then how many of them were copycat? And then how many of the involved drugs, whether it was the shooter or the patsy? It was very interesting. I said 70% were covert operations. He said 50 to 90%. He had a rage. And then I said 20% were copycat. He said the rest of his range. And then I said 100% involved drugs. And in fact, if you look at what's known about any mass shootings, is whether it's the shooter or the patsy, it's remarkable how many of them have a heavy record of taking drugs, particularly psychotropic drugs. So I continue to believe that many of these situations are covert operations. And it's astonishing to watch all the commentary and read all the commentary of people who can't fathom that such a thing exists. They really just don't know that any of these could be covert operations. They literally think these are sole individuals who are inspired to do this on their own. And it's very amazing to watch the convoluted sort of commentaries they come up with. The question is, if this is a covert operation, what inspired it? I think one subscriber wrote in, and I'll read you his note. The last time they pushed TPP through Congress, we had, of course, the Charleston shooting. Here it comes again. So, yes, it could have been something to distract from the fact that they made an agreement on the TPP. But I think the more likely reason, and of course it could be multiple, is that with the Pope in town, you had a real push, and the gathering at the UN, a real push to say, okay, come on, get the guns in. If you look at either the corporate agenda overriding local, state, and national laws and TPP, or the Pope pushing the equivalent of Agenda 21 in a cap and trade taxation system really designed to control top down, you need the guns pulled in because both of them are overriding property rights. And of course, guns protect property rights and contractual rights of the people who own the guns. The reality is, I don't think the number of deaths will decrease if you get gun control, because in fact, just different people are going to get killed. It's going to make it much easier to run people off their lands, you know, to assassinate dissidents, on and on and on. So, if anything, I would expect the death rates to go up, not down, if the guns get pulled in. Clearly, I'm not the only person who believes this. It looks to me like Obama once again will be voted man of the year by the gun dealers. Let me just read to you from Fortune magazine. The summer of 2015 was a great time to be a firearms dealer. The FBI conducted 1,795,102 firearm background checks through the National Instant Criminal Background Check System in September, suggesting gun sales were at an all-time high that month. That means that's the fifth month in a row to set a record for background checks. So apparently gun sales are at an all-time high. Let me just finish the drop to the end of the article, and I sent this into the website, so it'll be up on the on our website if you want to check it. As for why sales are so high, Fortune reported in June that it would be possibly be caused by Obama calling for stricter gun control laws. As Business Insider Sam Rose said, gun makers don't benefit from tighter gun control. They benefit when there is talk of tighter gun control, but those talks go nowhere. Anyway, I think the American people have gotten pretty hip to what this is about. And as you can tell, the uglier the top-down agenda gets in terms of gun control, the more everybody wants to have a gun. So who says the American people aren't smart? Okay, so we talked about the woman thing. We talked about the gun thing. Now I want to talk about the climate change thing. If you've ever dug in and looked at cap and trade systems, I once had someone who was called in to clean up a not-for-profit that was in charge of setting the emission standards pull me aside. She was afraid for her life and tried to explain to me the corruption that was going on. You're talking about creating a economy that is defined and manipulated through junk science, where political forces decide how much resources something uses or how much carbon it emits, and proceeds to direct and steer and engineer the entire economy around its kind of junk science. It's pretty scary. And what I do need to do before the year is out is pull some people in and let's start talking in the Saleri Report about Agenda 21 and cap and trade, so you can understand what a bad idea this is. But we certainly had the Pope make a big fuss about climate change, and shortly thereafter trying to come out and say that it would finally institute a cap-and-trade system. I think the chances of China being able to do an effective cap-and-trade by 2017, which is the year they gave us, I think that's very challenging. However, we have seen coming out of HUD a new round of development plans, which are certifiably psychotic. And we had the UN announcing a new sort of Agenda 21 on steroids during the gathering. Here's the reality. What they want to do is literally shift as much population as possible into megacities, where it makes it much easier to control and manage people. And I think a global cap and trade system, among other things, will be designed to do that. I would note that during the UN, again, this is up on the website as well, the DOJ signed something called the Strong Cities Initiative, where it will collaborate with 28 other international law enforcement agencies on how they can strengthen urban communities against violent extremism. So this is not a pretty picture. But my favorite comment on the whole thing was Don Cox, once again, who delighted us last week when he said that the presidency of the United States is not an entry-level position. Great comment, Don. This week he says, now the Pope came out this week also to hammer home the idea that we've got to fight global warming. He came out in a jet plane and added significantly, I guess, to carbon consumption. But this is going to be a semi-religious crusade, and it's maybe the biggest one of our time. You know, it's remarkable how none of these people think global warming is bad enough so that they should change their pattern of enormous carbon consumption. Okay, so we talked about the women thing, we talked about the gun thing, we talked about the climate change thing. Let's talk about the energy model. As I've said this before, I'll say it again. Putin saying what he said in his speech at the UN is pretty interesting. If you go to the website and take a look at the little commentary I did, he talked about what I perceive to be breakthrough energy technology. Now, one of the reasons that's so important is if you look at the knowledge and the scientific wherewithal that the Russians have, I'm highly confident that they have breakthrough energy technology. I also, as you know, believe Putin is getting support from the West. So if he's saying this, he's got support in the West from those financial interests to be saying that. And so Putin waving a trial balloon of breakthrough energy in a speech of that importance and coverage, I find very interesting. Now, I would point out that, of course, the Russians are busy marketing gas and nuclear deals around the world, which is far from breakthrough energy. Given that commodity prices are plunging, I think it's very interesting to see that trial balloon run, particularly because if you were to start to let that cat out of the bag, it could do tremendous things for productivity and essentially extinguishing the global debt or creating enough equity valuation that would offset the global debt. Then we see Moody's come out with a report that half the coal deposits in the world are not economic. And I had to put up a little sort of commentary on Peabody Energy, whose stock is now down 97.7%, if you can imagine that. So whatever kind of bad year you're having, it could be worse. You could be the CEO of Peabody Energy. Our hero this week is Aretha Franklin. If you look in the geopolitical section this week, and you have to click down through the more, we put up a video of Aretha Franklin singing at the World Conference of Families. The Pope and some of his entourage were on the stage, and she came out and sang and didn't acknowledge him as she came out or left. She was later to apologize and said she didn't notice him. It's not surprising that the Pope would and sort of the Pope's advance team would want to use someone of the credibility of Aretha Franklin. But what's quite amazing is if you watch the actual performance, Franklin, who is a very devout Christian, and I would say has a tremendous anointing. She grew up in the church. Her dad was a minister. She sang Amazing Grace, and Christ was absolutely present. There was an amazing spiritual power to it. The Pope looked very intimidated. And frankly, if you watch her witnessing and his intimidation, it's absolutely spellbinding. So I would encourage you to dig into geopolitics and watch Aretha have a tremendously spiritual experience with the audience while the Pope was astonished at sort of the presence of the real thing. Ask Catherine. Dear Catherine, if we can find a link to an article that we believe you might want to post at the Solari homepage, what email address should we send it to? You can send it to customerservice@solari.com, but obviously if you send it to askcatherine@solari.com, it'll come through. You can also post it in subscriber input. If you go to the website over on the right, there's a little thing you can click for leaving a comment, and that'll take you to Solari to subscriber input. You can do it there. You have to be logged in if you want to leave it there. So email, we'll get it, or post it on the website. Dear Catherine, I recently watched an interview with vaccine expert Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, in which she said that all of the push around getting our children vaccinated is simply to address a fever, a cough, a rash, and some diarrhea. With this being said, in your opinion, how much of the push for vaccines is really about increasing pharmaceutical revenue and or solidifying their ability to continue to experiment us with foreign substances? I think if you look at the strategic level, very little is about making money. I'm not saying that different companies aren't pushing different vaccines because they want to make money. But ultimately, if you look at the big strategic decisions that causes kids to have so many vaccines, it's really about reengineering humans. And as I've said before, I've tried very hard to understand what this is about, and I don't understand because this has been going on for a very, very long time, whereby the leadership has been pushing vaccines and the population has been pushing back and resisting them. But if I had to guess, I would say that they're trying to re-engineer humans to be easy to resonate with machines, basically to be, you know, whether it's your smartphone or the different forms of entrainment that come through various kinds of media. They want somebody who will resonate with machines instead of resonate with all living things in each other. So think of this as a way of getting you to resonate with the leadership instead of with the divine intelligence, if you want to look at it at the highest level. I think they want humans who are more manipulable, less intuitively and telepathically intelligent, and easier to control. It's not a pretty picture when you really dig in, but it's, I assure you, I don't think this is about making money. Although, you know, on the day-to-day level in the short term, that, of course, matters a lot. Someone sent in the picture of the Air France human resource boss having his shirt torn off as he escapes a furious mob. Interestingly enough, if you watch the videos of that event, most of the people doing the mobbing and the tearing were not, I would not say they were second and third generation Frenchmen. They looked like mostly immigrants. And I don't think that that's a good sign. The person who sent it in said, Vive la France. The airline industry as an industry, as of a couple of years ago, had literally from the time that the first plane flown has not produced a profit. And it's generally been a subsidized industry. I think it's very important that any economic organization be able to set its employment according to what optimizes the business. I think a corporation has to be able to lay people off. So I, you know, it goes back to private property rights, whether it's an individual or it's a business of any kind. So I don't think that that's good. And I also don't think that violence and that kind of mob behavior within a company setting or a work setting can lead to anything good. Now, I'm certainly not against organizing and doing a variety of things. One of my favorite stories is Saul Alinsky was negotiating with Kodak in Rochester and got 200 tickets to the Rochester Symphony and told the folks at Kodak that if they didn't give him what he wanted, he would take 200 workers, feed them beans all day, and then go to the opening of the symphony. And you can imagine what he said would happen next. And he got everything he wanted, and they never had to show up at the symphony. So I think there's a way to get what you want with a greater sense of humor than tearing people's clothes off and threatening their lives. Catherine, I realized this morning that the mass shooting in Oregon coincided in time with a news release that an agreement in the TPP had been reached. Then it hit me that the last time Fast Track was being pushed and failed, there was the Charleston Church mass shooting. Perhaps I'm just being silly, but the mass shooting seemed to be extremely convenient ways to create a whole lot of distraction, which, if there is something to this, then this trade agreement must be a real whopper. I'm hoping you can assuage my mind and tell me I'm just imagining things. Nope, you're not imagining anything. This trade agreement is a real whopper, and it's going to take a while for us to see everything that's in it. If you take a look, there's a very interesting interview that Drudge Metrudge gave with Alex Jones, and he talks about some of the implications of the copyright rules and the extent to which it can put a serious damper on his websites and other websites. Anyway, so my attitude or my comment on your comment is excellent comment. Dear Catherine, the next person asks for advice on IRA. I can't give investment advice on the Solari report, not in general or individual. So I'm sorry I can't help with that. If you listen to our equity overview this week, one of the things I did say is the good news about the correction is that now we have opportunities, and the real opportunities are very high-quality G7 companies whose stocks have good dividends. So I will say that if you listen to the equity overview, you'll hear me discuss that, and I think that is the case. This person also recommended an individual named Corey Good, who has been talking broadly or very publicly about his involvement in a secret space program. I have asked Richard Dolan if he's vetted him, and he has not. And so until Richard vets him, I don't have an opinion and really haven't watched any of his stuff. I sort of take my lead from Richard on those things. Okay, let's go to the movies, David versus Monsanto. In fact, we've discussed this once before. In 2011, I had Bertram Verhaeghe, who's a fantastic German documentary on the Saleri report, and we discussed the series that he had done on genetically modified seed and food. He's done a whole series of movies, one of which was the film David versus Monsanto, about Percy Schmeiser, a Canadian farmer who literally has beaten Monsanto to a pulp, and whose story really helped solidify, I think, a lot of the fury and concern with Monsanto and its methods. There have been reports that Monsanto has literally had Blackwater kind of guys in black trucks intimidating, beating up farmers. You know, I don't know if it's true or not, but frankly, at this point, I'm afraid that Monsanto's credibility is, I don't think there's a greater absence of credibility on the planet that at this point than Monsanto's. Anyway, it's a really remarkable documentary, as are all of the ones that Bertram has made on the food. And I would encourage you to watch it. And, never say that one person can't make a difference, because if you look at the recent bans that are unfolding in Scotland and Germany and France and other European countries, I think Schmeiser's efforts contributed a great deal to really bringing the issues into stark relief and put a real weapon in the hands of many, many effective activists, some of which we've had on the Saleri Report, including Jeffrey Smith. So if you want to feel inspired and see what one incredible man can do, take a look at David versus Monsanto. It's a wonderful and very inspiring documentary. Okay, as I said, our interview tonight is me giving the third quarter equity overview. These are always very important. We prepare a wonderful web presentation with charts that give you a real roundup of all the markets. And I've had many people in the subscriber base say to me, well, I'm not a financial person, so I don't really look at those. Very important for you to look at those, because I'll tell you something, price matters. And what these charts that we try and do every quarter, both for the equity overview and wrap-ups, give you is a roundup of what is happening in the prices, what's happening to the U.S. dollar, what's happening to equity markets around the world. And they really tell a story about what's going on globally. And it's very, I think, very useful in a short period of time to scan through those graphics. That's why we're putting up charts every Monday early. We're putting up the Friday close charts that I use to review each week to review the global markets. And clearly, if you take a look, everything is down, down, down. A major correction, particularly in Europe and Asia and the emerging markets. During the third quarter, S&P down about 10%, which is finally our 10 to 25% correction, but is not huge. Anyway, but clearly what all those charts say and is flashing a sign saying slow down, slow down, slow down. And in fact, we saw the IMF come out this week and cut their projections of global growth this year. So clearly the economy is sluggish and slow everywhere. Anyway, check out the charts. Remember, a correction is always an opportunity, and I think there is significant opportunity now coming into the fourth quarter, and I certainly hope to take advantage of it. Okay, so enjoy the equity overview. That's it for this week. Next week, I'm really excited. Rambus, finally, we're going to be doing the dollar, gold, and the S&P 500. We had scheduled Rambus of Rambus Chartology to do this on in September, and literally right after I scheduled him, his site got hacked, and they've been struggling to get it fully operational since, and so we've decided what we're going to do is do this. I've sent him questions. He's preparing a complete written response. Now, if you look at the beauty and depth of his charts and his charting technology, you really need to do this in writing. It's much easier. So he'll produce a written piece, and then I'll go through it in the discussion myself. And Rambus is pretty shy. He doesn't like to be in public, as you can tell from his using his handle and not his real name. But one of the things I've asked him to explain is why he has the handle Rambus, which is a wonderful story. Anyway, so the dollar gold and the S&P 500, a deep look by my favorite technical analyst at, to me, the three most important indicators of the global economy, the dollar gold and the S&P 500. Then the following week, we have the third quarter wrap-up, and our theme this quarter is going to be the Chinese stock market. I think a very important player in the global economy. We've now seen in 25 years the Chinese stock market go from 0 to 1/7 of the global economy. If you count Hong Kong, if you don't, it's 1/10 of the global equity markets. That's an astonishing performance in 25 years, and it's clearly a player to be reckoned with. If the global equity markets are going to succeed, we need China to succeed. And there's certainly challenges of that happening, as you can guess from watching the last 3 months. And then October 29th, I was really struck when I was in Switzerland and Germany over the last month at how wonderful it is to be in a place where there is significant support and lots of small business and lots of family-owned business. There's a real broader base to the Swiss and German economy because you have, I think, a much healthier environment towards small business. And so I was delighted when Jason Bawden-Smith's new book is coming out. And we're going to have a wonderful interview with him. He's Australian, on the Entrepreneur's Call to Action. He's got a great new book on entrepreneurship, which I think is can really help a young person understand what it means to become an entrepreneur, how you do it, how it evolves, and it takes it out of the kind of promo that you see in so much of the American literature. This is a real this is somebody who was a very successful entrepreneur and came at it, I think, the right way, and has done very, very well, and has sat down and written a book about how to do it, and has done a remarkable job, I think, in helping a young person. So the Entrepreneur's Call to Action, and if we're gonna build a wonderful world, we need lots of entrepreneurs called to action. There's no doubt about it. Anyway, The Entrepreneur's Call to Action with Jason Bawden-Smith. It's going to be a great one. So until next week with Rambus, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.